how often do you go to a party with all your friends and say, I'm a salesman? You don't. You say, I do this, or I'm business development for so-and-so. We even call it, we remove the word sales from our titles.
Welcome, construction industry professionals. You're listening to The Art of Construction, specifically designed for contractors and architects to grow your business. Here are your hosts, Devin and Kevin.
So, Kevin, you're going to love this guest, Matt Rowe, who owns the Carruthers Group, as well as works with Jamie Rowe on systems and structure from her Tuesday Consulting. He was kind of the face, too, and that's how I really got to know Matt Rowe, who came in and ran our sales meetings for a while and helped really drive the culture before you were at Mountain View. This guy is the sales guru.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be important for all of our listeners out there, architects, builders, contractors, because the reality is we're all in the sales business, whether we're really salespeople or not. I mean, ultimately we are. And you've told me a lot about Matt, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what he has to say and the gems that he'll give us that we can all get some benefit from.
So tying all the shows together, his wife is Jamie Rowe, that was on show 8, and then Brett Reitmeier, my VP of Sales and Marketing, who Matt met with Brett and I and really helped us create Mountain View sales culture that Brett talks about on show 11. So they're all timeless shows, but they all tie together. So if you like one, you can go back and get the secret sauce, what everybody has to say. So let's dive in and have a chat with Matt Rowe, owner of the Carruthers Group, as well as the sidekick of his wife, Jamie Rowe, in Tuesday Consulting.
Here we go.
What's your favorite beverage?
What is my favorite beverage?
Yeah.
Beer.
What flavor of beer?
Usually local, Great Divide, Haas right now.
Haas. All right. It's fun being in Colorado. We have so many. Every day there's a new brewery popping up, right?
Absolutely. I'm trying to figure out what I can sell them. So that's the, I mean, there's, like you said, every day there's a new brewery popping up, and they're all popping up in these boutique industrial complexes. If we can figure out what to sell them, then
there you go.
Holy cow! Yeah, the guy that was the guy that was in the mining for gold never made money, but the guy selling the shovels, axes, picks, and donkeys, that was the guy that got rich.
There you go. Well said. What's your favorite place you traveled?
Favorite place I've traveled? Long time. Where it's my family owns a fishing camp in Northern Ontario, Canada, and going up there once a year is bliss. No one can call me. My cell phone doesn't work.
The true getaway.
You picking wild blueberries up there?
We have picked wild blueberries before. You just got to look out for the bears.
Yep.
What's your favorite hobby?
Favorite hobby? Right now, this time of year, skiing. Second is probably CrossFit.
CrossFit. And you've done your fair share of exercising as well with Ironmans and all that kind of stuff too, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you'll have to tell us a story about that when we get into the show. So, Matt Rowe, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, tell us about who Matt Rowe is, your background and your companies, now that we got to know Matt Rowe a little bit.
I grew up in a family business, so it was one of those deals where at a young age, I built shelving to sweeping floors, to cleaning toilets, to all that type of stuff. And then I was shipped off to Canada at a young age to work in my grandpa's fishing camp. And I was a fishing guide and selling that kind of stuff, to pumping septic tanks, to name it, all the awful, from painting to mowing. But it is some of the best times of my life. Started that when I was about 13. But I was always selling something. I was selling guiding services. I was selling coming back to the camp next year, or I was going to trade shows with my father to promote his business from a young age. So when I went to college, I wanted nothing to do with the family business, to the degree I went and got a psychology major. I refused business. Like, every business class I took seemed ridiculous to me, and I just walked away from it and took psych classes. So I moved out to Denver to become an industrial psychologist, working IO for various organizations that wanted to streamline production or that type of degree, and got an opportunity to take a company out of bankruptcy. It was a family business, and they had the manufacturing plant that they purchased was out here in Colorado, and it was losing anywhere from $50,000 to $70,000 a month. And so they were either going to shut it down or get it out of bankruptcy, and they needed somebody to transition the company, either close
this it. Wasn't the family business. This
so it's part of the family business.
Okay.
So this is a division that was purchased.
Okay.
So it was what we made were black and orange for sale signs. So we are running way too rich. Like, you could see all the ergonomics that were incorrect in the business, even at a young age. And so I was asked to just go in and shut the company down or get it out of bankruptcy. And I ended up getting it out of bankruptcy in 7 months. And so we were then operational, but then I had to move the company from Colorado to Moline, Illinois, because we were selling a commoditized product and we couldn't compete. So it was costing me three times as much to make a product than all my competitors that were based out of the Midwest. So Jamie at the time is
his wife, who was on show 8.
Yes. And so Jamie at the time was working for Arthur Anderson, and Arthur Anderson had to shut its doors because of some
little controversy out there. Yeah.
Yeah. So we brought her on to actually process out the entire company. And because of that, we went from 27 employees here in Denver to 3 in Moline, Illinois. And so
Wow. It
was a huge undertaking. And then we became the manufacturing arm of the major corporation, and then eventually was brought into the major corporation to become their executive vice president, running the entire operation. And I realized that a relationship with my family was more important than all the money and all the success in the world. And so Jamie and I left. It's going to be 6 years ago now. And then we moved out here to Denver, no jobs, about 2008. Devin, I'm glad I am not in financial forecasting, because I thought that bubble wasn't going to break for another 2 years. I was incorrect. And so we looked, and I ended up buying a pizza box manufacturing company. Reason why I bought it is there are only 4 pizza box manufacturers in the country for independent restaurants. And so we were the only one in Denver. It's very regionally specific, and we knew we could grow. My issue was I ran out of cash. I grew it too fast. I outsold our production, and I grew by 108% our first year, and it was too much. I should have grown 20% our first year, and most likely I'd still be making pizza boxes today.
Huh.
So because we grew so fast, we ran out of cash, and it just started to spiral quick, and I had to shut that company down. Instead of shutting it down just completely and walking away from it, I sold it to my competitor. So walked away for a period. I wanted to get back into psychology, said, what do I want to do with my life? And I started teaching emotional intelligence and neuro-linguistic programming to sales professionals for a couple of years. Had fun doing that. We would get boot camps and trainings, and it was all done locally here. And then about that time, I met a gentleman by the name of Carl Becker, and he had this idea for creating a new type of call center. And so what we created was the Carruthers Group. And we've been asked many times, what does the Carruthers Group stand for? We just think it sounds really cool. It sounded official, like... We knew a couple people named Carruthers, and it just sounded really official, kind of like the Charlie's Angels kind of thing.
Yeah.
Kind of in the wings. So it worked for us. And so now what we're doing is we're not only going out and finding new business. So we are servicing the top of the sales funnel, and I have whole teams that call. But every one of my team members gets anywhere from 30 minutes to 60 minutes of professional development every day. So we're constantly trying to make every team member better at what they do. And I want somebody that is right from college, somebody that has never sold before, feels that they want to get into sales, they like having conversations with people, they just don't know how to crack that nut. I'll teach them how to crack that nut.
So you're looking for people, it sounds like, in that arena that have not been previously sort of converted into bad practices and that kind of thing. You want somebody that's pretty fresh.
You hit it on the head. It's much easier to start with a clean slate than try to clean it all up and this is the way, this is the system that I have, and this is what it works. So we are very systematic in everything that we do. It's all I need somebody to do is have a really good conversation on the phone. I'll write the emails for them. I will do all that other piece. But when I talked about it being sales is all about consistency, we created a whole system and structure that just makes it consistent every day.
And that's where you tie into Tuesday Consulting as well, right?
Correct.
So that's where I kind of want to chime in and say how I got to meet Matt Rowe was through Nick May, who's a fellow podcaster I'm always talking about on this show. So Nick introduced me to Jamie and Matt. And Jamie, like I said earlier, was on show 8. And she's kind of phase one, doing the systems and structure that they've learned from, like Matt said, to the big companies and kind of started over. And now they're helping other companies build up their company through systems and procedures, meaning Jamie on that side. And then the perfect yin and the yang, like I talked about with Brett and I, as Jamie sets it up and then Matt comes in and knocks it out of the park. And it was such an awesome experience, like Matt, where Brett talked about how we said we had to have the experts that knew everything. That was Brett's deal. We don't have time to train people from the beginning. And Brett's biggest success he talked about on show 11 is his sales kind of system that he put together. And now it's all about finding the right people that fit our culture and build them up. We can teach you how to talk window and door, but we can't teach you how to get out of bed and be productive and get your computer and set up your ideal day and all the stuff that is necessary to be successful. So that's what, so we hired Jamie to come in and set up the systems and structure. And then we hired Matt to come in and help set up our sales culture. And when I'm always, every show I'm talking about set up your culture, Matt, you really helped me with that. So that's right. Why I wanted to have Matt in on the show. And it's so great having Kevin as my co-host because he's the one that lives and breathes this behind the scenes that has never met Matt, but he understands the culture through Matt setting that up and doing the same thing consistency day in and day out. We had the pleasure of hearing Matt speak at our IDI event. So it's one of our other ways we give back to the design community. A few of us business owners have gotten together and we have a bi-monthly presentation at an industry partner. It's all about growing their business. And Matt came and did a presentation at that, and it was one of my favorite ones. And if you don't mind, I'd love to have you tell us the story about your Ironman with consistency, because that's really hit home for me from that day, the consistency to build my business through the art of construction and everything we do at Mountain View, the Mountain View family.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll take a step back with it. I used to weigh 255 pounds. Now I'm a measly 175. So what happened was is I kind of freaked out a little bit and said, I got to do something different or I'm going to die of a heart attack before I turn the age of 50. So when I started to work through all that is it just became habitual for wake up in the morning, go for a run, go for a bike ride, and kind of do what you love. Everybody talks about the best workout to lose the most weight. The best workout is the one you'll do. And so,
it's good point.
That's it. If you like a Nordic track, that's the one you go for. But, I mean, really, when it comes down to it, is it just became consistent. So, in 2006, I was an All-American at the half Ironman distance. I'd never bit off a full Ironman. And then in 2008, I paralyzed my right leg. And so, for 4 months, I couldn't use my right leg. It wouldn't function. And so, I went to a neurosurgeon. He did a micro laminectomy on me and got me back operational. But for 2 years, it still didn't work. So out of sheer frustration in November of 2010, I had all these buddies that were doing Ironman and all that kind of thing. And so out of sheer frustration, I could not pick myself up on my, couldn't pick myself up on my calf, like walking on tippy toes. And so I just signed up for Ironman. And then I trained, and it was just a matter of getting the habits and consistency. I knew how to do it. I knew how to go. I had to go for the bike rides. I had to go for the runs. And in 2011, I crossed the finish line at Ironman Arizona.
Nice.
And so it was a heck of a lot of fun. I remember coming down. As people talk about it, I've raced over 100 triathlons, and I don't remember any of them. you go so hard, there actually is a chemical in your brain that releases that forces you to forget the pain. That's why we have more than one child. You will find this out as you go to have two, maybe.
Maybe.
Right now, she hasn't forgot about that.
No. It takes a little while. Yeah. But Iron Man is the only one I remember. I enjoyed it. I remember coming down the finisher chute, everybody screaming for you, and I stopped before the finish line, maybe about 100 yards before the finish line, and everybody's screaming at me to go, and I'm like, why? I'm like, this is it. This is where I spent the last year getting to this point that I could actually look at all you guys and enjoy this moment. And so I enjoyed the moments of it, and I think that, I mean, it started to change my life a little bit to kind of go into, you know, it's less about the constant pursuit of being the best, but enjoying the moments along the way.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nice.
That story at the IDI, and then I was like, man, I got to get this guy into the Mountain View family. And I was like, how can I afford them? And so I was like, Devin, get creative. Sometimes you got to think outside of the box. I didn't have the marketing dollars, so I was like, so I've got to know Matt and Jamie behind the scenes, and they're like, well, we bought this new house, and they're like, well, and Jamie's like, it's okay. I said, well, what's wrong with it? And she, and this is when I was kind of phase one, and she's like, well, you know, it's kind of just, there's things that just are kind of off. I was like, what is it? She's like, I'm not quite sure. I was like, well, you should have Nick and I come out, and maybe we could take a look at it and see how we could spruce it up. Well, Nick and I know how to spruce things up. So
oh, yeah.
Nick May and I come in the front door, and he owns a painting company, and I own a window and door company. And so I got going. I was like, man, this is the perfect strategy to get Matt and Jamie into my business and help each other out. And that's what life's all about when in business, is find a way to get it done. So long story short, as we put all new windows and doors in their house, Nick painted it, and I think it really did transform the house. And it was so fun to go over there, and they kind of had a house party where we all went to, and that's where the friendship, I think, really took off. Mm-hmm. And when you really have the friendship, and then our businesses really all grew that much more, and it's kind of come in full circle to now have you and talk about that story of how Matt kind of came in, and Devin was a sales guy. I've always just been a sales guy, not an owner, and Matt sat down with me, to just like Jamie did, and said the same questions and kind of interviewed me, found my weaknesses to build the sales culture. And I think now our sales meetings are way more productive than you just got to have a meeting to have a meeting. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my New Year's resolutions, is I'm not having meetings just to have a meetings. That's the beauty of working for a boutique or a mom-pa company, that we can change things quickly and we don't need to have a meeting this week if there's nothing to talk about. But keeping the consistency to where you have something to talk about that's valuable to everybody. And that's what Matt really came in and strived to help make us have a consistent, if you want to elaborate on kind of that, your processes and the story with Mountain View.
Sure, absolutely. And I want to take a step back. We just had our house reappraised. And because of the windows and doors and trim, and I'm not doing a shameless plug at all.
we'll take it. That's okay.
Yeah. They appraised it for $20,000 more than what we had originally priced it a year ago. And she walked in and looked at everything. She goes, holy cow, this place is completely different than when I first came in. This house is actually really nice inside. So, and I do have to say, my greatest story about this is I come in and Devin looks at me and goes, you're breaking my heart. And I'm like, how am I breaking your heart, Devin? He goes, I'm going to put these beautiful doors in, but I'm going to put up this shitty trim again around it. And he goes, come on, follow me out to this one, you know, trailer I got. Look at this trim I got. This is a Craftsman trim. And he puts up this trim in my house. Beautiful. Absolutely. Like, greatest thing we've ever done. So when Devin started to talk about his sales team and the challenges and all of it, it was a similar story of what I've heard from distribution companies to manufacturing companies to, I mean, the industry didn't matter. I mean, what a lot of people say is, well, my industry's different. And I got to shake my head, no, it's not. Most industries are the same. What it really comes down to is everybody wants the sales team that are laughing and they're collaborating together and they're joking about jobs and they're making, you know, that type of thing where they feel like a family and they're this tight-knit group. Kind of think of it as like a football team. They're all kind of congealed together and they're, you know, going out and they're talking about that. Everybody wants that. But the problem is nobody knows how to get it. And so at the end of the day, you got to start somewhere. And Martin Luther King said, in the lieu of this week, you don't have to see the whole staircase. You just need to see the first step. And you take the first step towards it, and then all of a sudden it'll start to evolve. And they're going to follow the pace of the leader. So if the leader is doing this stuff, if they're showing up on time, if they're talking about it, if they see their passion and all that, then all of a sudden it starts to evolve. So when we started to design it, I knew Devin had passion. That was not, there are some companies you walk into and the leader is so drained that it's hard to get their passion or get them to actually have an inspirational conversation in front of everyone. That was not an issue at Mountain View. We had that. What happened was, is you're looking at it more from a system side. So the work that Jamie was doing, I saw what she was doing. I could read everything that her and Devin had worked on. And then you could somewhat start to craft the pieces around it. And what it kind of came down to is everybody speaking the same language. And get them showing up. Get them being a part of this. Showing that this is everything that we're doing. There's something bigger out there driving it. And as soon as they start to see that something's bigger out there, then all of a sudden you can't stop the momentum. It starts to evolve on its own. As what you said, this, you know, team has kind of changed. It's evolved. It's different. Sales meetings are a living, breathing document. It's going to change. It's going to be different. If you think what you're doing today is going to be the end all be all, you're wrong. It's going to be different.
You know, Matt, I'm curious about something that you brought up earlier that kind of ties in with what you just mentioned, and that is the importance of our words and thoughts. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. Mm-hmm. You know, so often what we think about comes about. And a lot of times we get stuck in things that are not real positive. So talk a little bit about what you did to learn about NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, how you implement that, and kind of put it in a, it sounds like this big, complicated concept that's some sort of scientific thing, but really kind of, if you could, distill it down a little bit in terms of how you learned it, why you find it important, and then how you implement that into the kinds of sales training that you're doing.
So what you're really talking about, down to the basis with neuro-linguistic programming, is likability. You're going to sell something or you're going to have a conversation about a job based upon your likability factor, because people don't buy because of your product. I mean, they can go get Anderson anywhere down the road, but they're going to buy Anderson because you took the time to listen to them. You are like them. They feel safe with you, because you got to remember the human brain is always working in safe, not safe. We have an amygdala. And our amygdala drives our actions. So when you drive down the road, if you're in a bad neighborhood and you ever get that bad feeling, it's just your amygdala telling you, I'm seeing things that aren't safe. Same thing is if, as a salesperson, when I used to train it, we used to bring everybody in and say, okay, divide the room in half, give me the world's perception of the word salesman. And the things that people would write down were awful. You would think that we all got into a position that is, we're robbing people blind, and we're not. And so what happens is the word salesman, or they think, oh, here's the salesman coming up, or the salesman just pulled up to the job site, or the salesman's here. The minute they say salesman, their brain immediately goes, I'm not safe. I have to protect myself. So what happens with neuro-linguistic programming, if I approach the situation differently, and I watch my tonality, if I'm speaking to somebody that is speaking at a slower rate of speech. Now, if you know me in social settings, I talk loud and I talk fast. If I would approach an accountant with that same tonality and rate of speech, I would be basically walked out of their office and told never come back. And so when you approach a job site, you're really getting to your key influence of the deal. I'm not saying you have to match their rate of speech, but just come down yours a little bit. Be conscious of how you're approaching a situation, because that can make the difference of whether or not you're going to continue the conversation and you're going to be asked to leave. And so what happens is we get excited. when somebody gives us a trigger word. That's interesting. Give me a quote. I'd love a quote on that. And what happens? We get excited about it. Oh my gosh, I got something. Well, the amygdala works reverse way too. It actually starts to fire up and can create excitement. Well, then I have adrenaline releasing into my system, and then I have cortisol releasing into my system. And if you get me adrenaline going, guess what happens? I talk faster. I get a little bit more excited. That's why salespeople that have 20 years experience tend to be better at what they do. It's not that they're better. They're just calmer. They're not thinking about that ultimate dollar at the end of the day. They're not thinking about, they've removed that sense of it, and so they seem like they're a little bit more polished in it all. So with neurolinguistic programming, you're just now creating a sense of awareness of how you approach a situation. Right now, as I sit here, I mean, Devin's got his finger up to his face and all this type of stuff. But as if I was going to sell something to Devin and he had his arms crossed in front of me, I'm going to cross my arms with him because I need to make his brain think I'm safe right now. Now, granted, I'm not here to talk him into anything. There's no magic word wizardry that I can do. Everybody does sales training and all that kind of thing of, oh, you need to approach it this way or say this. No. Make me feel safe. And I'll continue the conversation. At that point, if you give me that, I can tell you a story. And I can engage with you. And I can go on that next row.
Yeah, because so often in sales, if people approach it with a scripted, you know, message or, you know, trying to push salient facts, if the other party is not open to listen, mm-hmm. you don't have a chance.
None.
And that's, so no matter how good that message might be, if it doesn't get across, your chances of getting the ball moving forward down the field is pretty close to zero.
And we're always talking about be really good at a few things and know who you are. And, you know, Matt Rowe is on my advisory council, and I'm always talking about that. Surround yourself around good people. So I have Greg Gebbin, who's the old school advisory council member on my sales training, our sales culture, and Matt bringing this element to it. And we're always talking about the needs analysis and selling four ways to four different types of people and bringing all these different virtues together to be like the customer you're talking to. And then you build a relationship, and then you're all on the same page. And it's like you mentioned Anderson Windows. Anderson has understood that, meaning they have two totally different models. We are the relationship model. Mm-hmm. We are not a one-time close. Well, they also sell this franchise model called Anderson by Renewal that's a one-time close. The sales rep is a true salesman. They have one shot. They don't know anything about the customer, but I'm going to come in your house and I have one time to sell you, or another sales rep comes in there. And right. I think that's really long-term. I think that's going to tarnish the brand mm-hmm. because that doing that over and over, the one-and-done philosophy is you couldn't pay me enough money to live and sell that way. We sell based on relationship. As I say, we're looking for people who are looking for us and understanding who those customers are.
Yeah, it's how I grew up. I mean, it's where I saw the family business grow. That's where I saw all my businesses grow. When I'd walk into a pizza restaurant or I'd walk into a hardware store, they knew me by first name. And I knew them, I knew their dog, I knew their wife, I knew how many kids they had, because it was important enough for me to remember. That type of stuff. Now, naturally, what we end up doing is we do NLP naturally. It's nothing new you have to learn or anything like that. It's along the idea of it's a natural way of selling, of having a good conversation with somebody. If you ever left a conversation where somebody goes, wow, I really like that person. They really got me, or I really like them. They understand me. Yes, you understand them, but you're taking the time to listen to them. You're taking the time to really understand what their issues are, paint a picture, I mean, do all this type of stuff. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, it's what opportunities can I create and what problems can I solve for you? And I can't do either of those unless I understand truly what they are. And what happens is with experience, we tend to assume. Somebody says, I got a draft coming through right here. And you immediately go, oh, you need new windows. Well, you might find out that they have a hole in their wall, but you never asked about it. So you can almost say, well, your windows look great, but what you really need to bring in is the general contractor. I don't know if I'm a good fit or not. Well, that's just having a reality conversation because I don't want to sell you anything you don't need. What I would need to do is you brought me in to solve an issue for you. Let's get that issue solved. Let's find out what it really is. So we tend to, salespeople tend to be a little bit psychologists out there, and most people just want to be listened to.
One of the things I've always thought of in sales is a lot of our day-to-day activity is really being a detective, and part of that is, you know, gathering that information, you know, and then establishing that rapport, but being able to find out, like you say, if they're not going to tell you anything, and part of that's your job to create that safety that you're describing, but gathering information so that you can then put together some sort of a solution. If you don't have the information, it's pretty hard to solve a problem you don't know about, right?
You got that right. That is absolutely right, Kyle. You don't know it, and so you make assumptions.
Yeah.
And then you justify it. Human beings are fantastic at justifying. I didn't show up on time because traffic was really bad. I'll justify it till the day is long. I'll tell you about every car out there that actually frustrated me while I was getting here. But all of it, but really, when you think about it, I should have just left 10 minutes earlier. Should have said, it's probably going to be bad this morning.
Right.
So, but we're justification machines. So when you think about it at the end of the day, if you lose something, you'll justify why you lost it and why it wasn't your fault, because we need to feel good. Because guess what? Not only do other people want to feel safe, we want to feel safe too, that we're good at what we do.
Interesting.
So I want to elaborate on a story so Matt came in, ran our sales meetings, and kind of Brett and I were his guinea pigs, and he would, Matt and I would meet before the sales meetings and kind of talk about the last one and the next one and what went right, what went wrong, buy-in, and creating the right sales culture. What was it, 6 months or so you helped us with sales meetings, and about halfway in, you know, people were really buying into it, and then I think it was Courtney that said, well, what do I do when I send this email out and I just can't get a response? Mm-hmm. And you had a kind of script that you went by, and it just, you remember this?
Oh, yeah. Close file email.
Yeah. So just give us a story of how you answered Courtney and creating the right sales culture, about how we laugh about that still to today. And we say the went to outer space or whatever. Tell us that story.
Mm-hmm. So people are generally nice. And anybody that's not nice out there, I don't want to do business with them anyhow. So what happens is we're busy throughout the day. So when Courtney came to me, she had a client that she was trying to contact, and the person wasn't responding to her emails, wasn't responding to her calls. So what happens is we usually tend to give somebody 3 to 4 chances. And so the common courtesy is 3 days business, I'm going to send you an email back, or I'm going to let you know. Well, in some cases, you guys were doing B2C sales. So you guys were going to the end consumer trying to sell them. So going with the philosophy that people are generally nice, what you can do is you want to make them laugh. And so if you be different, make them laugh. So what I had Courtney do is I had her send an email that just basically said, I've tried to reach out to you a few times, and it sounds like something has, one of three things may have changed. Either A, you found another supplier and you're really happy and you're enjoying your new door hardware. B, you're still in the quoting process and you've decided not to take this path and replace what we had discussed. C, you have just retired to Bora Bora and now you are living on a beach drinking Mai Tais. And then underneath that, gosh, I hope it's C. With your permission, this is the trick, is with your permission, I'd like to remove you from my active follow-up list. And I hope the best, and I hope C happened. If I am incorrect, give me a call. And what happens is 70% of the time, you're making somebody chuckle on the other end, and guess what they do? They send you an email back, and it's either a yes, a no, or a clear next step. And I'll tell you, no's are a gift. I'd rather have somebody tell me no so I just stop worrying about it. There is so much business out there. All you got to do is just go find it and paint a good picture and build a relationship.
What do you think of that story, Kevin?
No, I think it's awesome because, you know, one of the biggest frustrations in sales is when you get no response. You know, meaning it goes on and on. You want to either clear it out and move on, but you kind of can't because you don't want to do that, and then they come back. So this is a good way to clear it out, and you get some resolution. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted you to tell that story, and then maybe Kevin elaborate, because contractors and architects listening to this, It's like, just let us know what's going on. And mm-hmm. we're all in this together. No is okay. You know, mm-hmm. we're just here to make sure you have a successful project. That's our Mountain View's why, to be the best supplier of windows, doors, and hardware to luxury mm-hmm. builders, architects, and designers to have the best finished project. Mm-hmm. Those are the words I tell anybody that walks in this door. If I'm here to educate you and we don't have the right fit for you, no problem. But just tell us and communicate.
Well, and one of the key things I'm just always amazed by in sales, and I've been in, as you know, Devin, a number of different industries, but this is a common denominator, is people don't like to say no. Mm-hmm. They don't like to give you the bad news. And in all honesty, it's much better to know where you're at than to be out in limbo. And that's a great way to kind of flush the decks, if you will, to do it in a way that is humorous and it's non-threatening, like you described, it's kind of part of that NLP thing that you were talking about. You know, mm-hmm. making somebody feel safe. You're giving them permission this way to have a laugh and to say no.
Yes, that is correct.
So
wherever you're at in the world listening to this show, I highly recommend finding your Jamie to set up your system and structures, and your Matt to come in. Even if you think you're the best sales organization in the world, they're going to come in and give you a different perspective, like Matt just said. And that was just one story of a sales meeting that I wasn't giving my sales team the right answers because they were beating their head against the wall because they're why, what, I... You know, because if you have a good selling organization, your leaders are making you follow up. So when you come in on your call reports and they're still there and you don't have a good answer to tell your internal team, mm-hmm. you got to have a good story on both ends to keep a good job, good Mountain View family, good company, everybody moving forward, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I was just going to say, too, another side of that is a lot of times salespeople don't like to hear no. And the reality is you're much better off hearing no. So you either A, can move on to the next challenge, if you will, or B, you've got a way to potentially turn that around. Mm-hmm. So by not knowing, you're sort of paralyzed, like you described earlier, and by taking that first step, you've got a chance to get somewhere, whether it be with that customer or somebody else.
Yeah, and you said something there that I thought was important is, not only that, is you're going to learn from the no. You're going to learn, you can dissect the call and become a student. I mean, great sushi chefs, they work on the perfection of the rice that they make. And so what we do in sales is an art. We are actually having a conversation with somebody and dissecting their problems and trying to figure out to the nth degree, without proving to me beyond a reasonable doubt, why they need to take the next step in this whole conversation. And it is an art. It is perfecting the whole process of it all. And so I watch people just walk away from it or leave it or, you know, stray away from it thinking, oh, gosh, this is terrible. I mean, I will say, of everybody listening, how often do you go to a party with all your friends and say, I'm a salesman? You don't. You say, I do this, or I'm business development for so-and-so. We even call it, we remove the word sales from our titles. Unless it says VP of sales, we don't put sales. We are sales makers. We're sales. We are business development managers. I mean, we try to even put fuzzy words to it. You're selling. But I'll tell you, everybody sells. My children at the ages of 11 and 9 sell me every day on why we needed to go do something. Can we go do this? And they are incredible salespeople.
Well, they're consistent, right?
They are consistent.
And they don't give up.
They don't. They always ask, and they're listening to me. And guess what they do? They're already tuned into my cues, nonverbal, of whether I'm angry or whether I'm happy, and they wait for me being happy, and then they ask the question. So they're already cued into my nonverbal communication, yep. neuro-linguistic programming. They're cued into it. It's natural. We have to. We're animals. We're human beings, and this is what we had to do to survive. So, yeah.
So what? Give a plug for Carruthers Group, and what's your secret sauce, or what do you guys do? It's a call center, right?
Technically, we are a call center, but we've spun it on its head a little bit. Of everybody listening who loves to make cold calls, and this is what we found out, is we don't. I mean, I had made calls, and this is what my business partner and I, we had made cold calls starting our careers. This is how you know, I got Family Dollar. I cold called the Family Dollar buyer. I mean, all that kind of thing. We don't like doing it because we don't like to hear no or get rejection. So what we did is when Carl and I started designing it, we wrote down everything that's awful about cold calling and we removed it. So what happens is most people don't know who to call. Some people don't know what to say when they get on the call. And guess what they do is they end up moving the pencils around their desk 10 times and they make 3 calls that day and said, I had a good day. I called a couple people. And they justify it in their brain why they're really good. What happens is if you actually get all that in front, my team members today say they have a bad day if they just get voicemails. They make the calls, they do the numbers, but really what they want to have is they want to have a good conversation with somebody. They want to talk to somebody, and we're always telling them, drive to the no. Get somebody to tell you no on the phone. And in order to do that, you got to tell them what you're doing, how you're doing it. We even did script training yesterday with the team of how they're actually positioning it when you talk to somebody on the phone. Is really, when I call you, you don't care what I do. You don't care that I could be the greatest window and door manufacturer in the world. You don't care if I've got the greatest product since the sun came home. What you really care about is how I'm going to fix a problem that you have. And if I don't fix that problem that you have, you're not going to take another 30 seconds to have the conversation.
So you set up key questions with companies that you're doing this for. So yes. What would be a question a contractor you'd ask when you're calling for a contractor to get, you know, a luxury builder that wants the right homeowner? What would be a question you would call, or how would you go through that process?
One of the questions that we always ask, and any customer this works, is, and it's going to seem a little hokey, Devin, if I had a magic wand and I could make this home look beautiful, what would that look like? And what happens is I'm getting somebody to have a conversation with me. I'm getting somebody to dream about it, because at the end of the day, they know they need this, they know they need that. They already kind of framed on, but you don't know whether or not they went somewhere over the weekend and they saw something beautiful. They saw something that they've never seen before, and they want to figure out how to duplicate it, and they want to see if you're the guy that can help them out and do it. And cool. So if you're doing stuff like that, is if I get you to paint a picture for me for what ideally you want to see it, so by asking the magic wand question, if I had a magic wand, and you do it, you probably heard Jamie and I say that a couple times during while we were meeting, because I need to know deep down what's driving Devin's why. Because if I can figure out, you know, any homeowner, any builder, I might have a homeowner tell me about they really want to just have Christmas with their kids here. And they want the home to feel warm and comfortable. And, well, I'm going to sell them a different product. Or I'm going to talk about maybe a certain design or a certain look and feel. Well, because you're making them feel that way and you're not just transactional, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It's all well and good, but at the end of the day, people are going to buy from you, or people are going to have you help them because of how you listen to them.
They like you.
Right.
Yeah. How, well, it's a non-threatening question. It's an open-ended kind of a question, so it's not a yes or no answer. Mm-hmm. It allows you a chance to hear from them in terms of, so you can navigate based on their responses.
Mm-hmm. I can look for fuzzy words. If they say, oh, I really just want a great-looking house, well, tell me what great looks like. I mean, great is just a fuzzy word out there. I mean, I can't define great. So get clarity on great. You know, you're asking clarifying questions, and it sets you up. But you hit it on the head. Is a question like that just sets you up for them to say fuzzy words. So you can drill down and really figure it out, and you're actively listening to it.
Now, I'm curious, is this done kind of at the beginning? Is that one of the first questions that your team is putting out there at the very beginning of the phone call, assuming that they get somebody live?
I usually do it towards the end.
At the end, okay.
And even, how does the process work? So Mountain Window and Door, or one of our contractors listening to this, says, man, I could use some more of the right customers. Mm-hmm. You call up Matt, and then how does the process work to the end of what they get out of it?
With the Carruthers Group?
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we put every company through a 6-week discovery period. And what this is we got to figure out what makes you the best in the world, what's your competitive advantage, what's your value propositions, and so we craft that. And and you fill out these documents for
us. So I got to stop you there. Mm-hmm. Those questions right there, 80% of the business don't take the time to figure that those questions out.
Right.
So it's, I always talk about the tools in your toolbox that you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
Finding out those whys are the most important tools of any tool mm-hmm. you can figure out. And Matt is so good at asking those questions to get those tools out of you.
Well, and it's a common language. So let's say you have three salespeople out there. You might have salesman A saying Y. You might have salesman B saying Z. And you might have salesman C saying, you know, A or something completely different. So what happens is there's no congruency. And the minute what Devin is saying is different than what Kevin is saying when you guys are out there, I have a lack of trust. Wait a second. I thought that they were really wanting to make my job beautiful, but Kevin's telling me that I'm going to get the best price.
So getting the cohesiveness to everybody's right. telling the same story and on the same page. So what we're doing at Mountain View right now is we're making a whole educational library where Devin is just turning on the camera mm-hmm. and I'm internally saying the way I think it's best to be done. And then we go to mm-hmm. the sales meetings and talk about that. And the old 80-20 rule, everybody is probably 80%, but then if they have questions on 20%, we can recraft that and then do the clip art, so to speak, and put it onto our YouTube channel that our customers, and that's the next phase we're working on.
And that's perfect because they're seeing this consistency of brand. And you're always seeing like a brand consistency out there. A lot of it is hooey, but really when it comes down to it is what I'm saying and what we want to find out is what I'm saying is the same thing as what you're going to say when I set the appointment for you.
So that's why you're spending that 6-week period with the owner of the company or mm-hmm. top management, whatever it may be, in order to build the foundation before you're going to the potential customers with cold calls.
Right.
You want to make sure that that messaging is correct.
Right. Because I could set an appointment and have, you know, at the end of the day, they're like, well, wait a second. The person on the phone said this. You're saying something completely different. Why am I taking an appointment with you today? Why am I going to take the time? And on the phone, they were selling something great, and now I'm hearing something different. So it's an inconsistency of message. So we're going to go through discovering. We're going to spend that. During that time, too, is I'm going to find out who your ideal target audience is. Because anybody that says, well, who's your ideal customer? And you're like, well, anybody who's building a house right now. It's an incorrect answer because it's like going elk hunting with a shotgun. I'm not going to ever take an elk hone. I'm just going to make a lot of elk upset. And so I'm using the wrong tool to go after the ideal person that I want to see. I mean, Mountain View Window and Door, you guys aren't going to go after a mass strip builder.
That's correct.
Because it's not your market.
So Matt, from his need, he did what we call a needs analysis. You mm-hmm. call what is that process
discovery.
Called?
Discovery.
So your discovery process, you found out we are catered to luxury mm-hmm. contractors, architects, and designers. Mm-hmm. And that's why from Matt teaching me that, I put the magnifying glass on it. And I probably say that 10 times a day. It's mm-hmm. it's like I'm a broken record probably, Kevin. And,
no,
and the team hears that so much because I am mm-hmm. constantly... Brett and I are focus, be mm-hmm. the best at what you are. And Matt really helped drive that through that 6-week period.
No, and that's where if you know who you ideally want to go after, if it's strip builders, if that's, and I'm probably using the wrong terminology because...
Production builders is the word
correct
we
term.
Use, yeah.
Production builders, it's not wrong to go after those guys. Just know how you're going to position your product and really what they want. And then I can go after every production builder in the world. And so for our customers, we find out who their ideal audience is for the message that I'm going to deliver. Think of it like fishing. I love to fish, grew up in a fishing camp, but I'd have customers come to me after not catching anything in Canada. That's pretty hard to do. And so all I would do is I'd put the right lure on their line, which is the right message that you're going to deliver, and I'd take them to the right spot, and I'd tell them exactly how to do it. Well, how is that any different than sales? I'm putting the right message, giving it to the right target audience, and I'm telling them exactly how to deliver it. And so I get my team to deliver that message consistently, and lo and behold, we get about anywhere from 5 to 7% say, you know what, yes, I am interested. We've now somewhat changed, we've evolved that Crothers Group has a new system that if you come out with a new widget or product, what I'll do is I'll test the market for you. What happens is a lot of entrepreneurs that are coming out with something new, they say, well, this is going to be great for the assisted living space, and this is what they're going to really need. Well, they're speculating. They may not have a customer in that space, but they've kind of sold themselves or justified what I talked about earlier. They're justified that this product is going to be great for this. I'll go test the market for them. I'll go tell them whether or not that this is actually the right thing. And once we discover what message, I'll go deliver it to the right spot. If you're going to use the fishing analogy, if I have customers that tell me they want to go fish for northern pike, and I take them to a rock pile, I'll tell you I'm not going to catch any northern pike by the rock pile. That's not where they live. But I'm delivering the right message and the right lure and everything to that area. But guess what? Wrong. We didn't catch any northern pike. And so what happens at the end of the day is we tend to deliver a message to the wrong target audience. Well, I'll make sure that every message that you're going to deliver as you grow your business goes to the right target audience, and we'll go find that for you.
Nice. So, Matt, what was your biggest challenge that you had last year?
Wow. Personally or professionally? There are multiple.
Let's talk about business.
Professionally, it was, I think, in defining who we really were as a company. Even though we do this for companies all around, it's kind of the cobbler's kids have no shoes. I don't think we are doing it for ourselves. So when we are constantly refining and getting the team's message, and when we're delivering results, but we always wanted better. And we wanted to enjoy this journey a little bit more along everything that we do. I'm very fortunate. My business partner is a genius when it comes to architecting a system. Now we're training our team and put it. So I think one of the biggest challenges is really defining who we are as a company and who the ideal person that we really want to go after.
Nice. And what was your biggest success of the last year?
You know what? Is being focused and consistent. Is there are a million things that you can do. I mean, a million and one things you can do. But really, the one that's the best one is the one that you actually just focus on and say, this is what I'm going to put my heart and soul into. And I watched a great video, Jiro Loves Sushi. It's on Netflix. If you get to watch it, do it. This guy's brilliant. He's in his 80s, and he's a Japanese guy that makes sushi. He spent 8 years, all his apprentices spent 8 years just to know how to make rice.
And did you get the name of that?
Yeah.
We'll put that in the show notes.
So. Absolutely.
All he does is he perfects his art. He's so focused on doing this. It's not like he's got another career where he sharpens knives, or he's got another career where he goes and, you know, she's like, nope, I'm 100% focused on being the best at this. And I think that's one of the greatest successes that I pulled out is being focused.
And that's the message of all these successful guests we've brought into Studio MVWD is that they all know exactly, they all know their why, they all know mm-hmm. who they are, and they're also focused on their business. And the most important thing is they laugh, smile, and have a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do here at Mountain View, and that's what I'm always talking about on the show is like how much we look forward to coming to work and doing this stuff versus mm-hmm. I did the same thing in the corporate world and hated it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding your why.
Yep. That's a great point, Devin.
I could talk sales all day with Matt Rowe because he gets me so jazzed up as an expressive and gives me so many cool things to think about. So on the message boards of the show, we reach out to Matt if you think this is something that could help your business. And thanks for coming in, and thanks for all your help with the company.
That was great. Oh,
you're welcome.
So you think a little bit of Matt Rowe's rubbed off on the Mountain View window and door culture and the art of construction and all the details, Kev?
No, it definitely does, and it's just amazing all the great ideas that he has. You know, I've been involved in sales for most of my adult life, and it's just amazing to me how you can keep learning new things. And while really the concepts are not new, the way that Matt addresses them, I think, are unique in a way that kind of gets you to focus. And on that point, you know, he talks about the importance of focus, how much of a difference that can make for all of us.
Yeah, and we've definitely have bought into Matt Rowe's philosophies, and it's just helped us tenfold. And that's why I was so excited to get him into the studio and get a glimpse of what he's done for Mountain View and how great he ties philosophy that he went to school for into business and best practices that I think are second to none. But you also say you're always learning about sales. And to be a quote-unquote salesman, you got to learn a lot of different tried and true practices from different people, and Matt Rowe is definitely one of them.
No doubt. And again, I think it's important that even if you're not directly in sales, the truth of the matter is, as human beings interacting with one another, we're always selling, as he described at the very end, talking about his kids. And we've all seen it. We all understand that. But it's really important to think about, because the concepts that he's talking about are applicable whether you're the CEO of a company, whether you're a manager of a company, or whether you're directly involved in sales, because truly at the end of the day, we're all selling things.
Yeah, and he creates a sales culture where you want to be part of that.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that's what Mountain View is so much fun, and why so many people are coming to Mountain View to do business, because the way we truly care. And that at the end of the day is Matt. I mean, so I had Matt tell that story about his Ironman and his race and all that stuff. And that was the end of his presentation that he did at our IDI presentation. His title was all about telling a good story. And that's kind of the title of this whole presentation, your why and telling a good story. And Matt, his storytelling is so great, but it's so heartfelt that you can't help but like him. And that's what he's portraying to us, too. You can't help but like Mountain View and the art of construction.
And the reality is that we all like to hear a good story, and it's all about human interaction, and that's what he talks about. And it's not really the nuts and bolts of sales so much as interacting with people in a way that's effective. And we can all get something out of that, I think. So I thought it was pretty powerful.
And man, is he effective. So I'd highly recommend you getting in touch with him. He plays a lot of different ways in the sales realm, from sales support to running sales meetings to his cold call company, and really helps you find your why. And if you're struggling with that, he was a dream for Mountain View Window and Door.
Great show, once again.
Thanks, Matt.
You have been listening to The Art of Construction. To listen to more, please go to www.mtnview.us and click on the podcast tab. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, and thanks for listening.